have to tell you, I'm in love with your book because I was always in love with Sex and the City. I even threw a farewell party for the last episode. And your book it just takes me back, you know?
Oh, that's so great. I'm so happy to hear that.
You fit an awful lot on the cover of this book, but the title says it all. It's Food and the City. It's not just the people we always see, the high-profile chefs and restaurateurs. You include everybody in this book.
Yes, that was what makes it so different from everything else. And especially, even in the section on chefs, I decided not to interview the chefs that everybody hears about from Food Network, but rather other people who I thought were equally interesting. And when I went in to talk to them, it turns out that they were amazing people. Like, there's the chef at Robert, which is a restaurant on Columbus Circle, a woman who was a parachutist.
Wow.
And, you know, she's from Portugal. She ended up becoming the executive chef of one of the finest restaurants in New York City, just because she was following her dream. So when I met her, I had no idea of any of that. And I realized that these are stories that nobody would ever hear if they didn't have a platform of some sort. So it's been pretty amazing. And I didn't do, as you said, I didn't just do chefs. I did I did bakers, and I did the guy on the street who sells halal, and I did... I interviewed the guy who makes tortillas, all these things that we eat that we don't really think about what goes into the making of them.
Were those people on the street surprised that you wanted to talk to them?
Yes, and that's such a good point. I interviewed two line cooks from the Four Seasons restaurant. They've both been there for 16 years, and they're both immigrants. And when I said to one of them, you know, I'd like to interview you for this book, he said, why would you want to interview me? I'm nobody. I'm nothing. There's no story behind me. And I said, you know, there's a story behind everybody. Every life has a story. And, man, his story was just amazing. Every one of these, especially the immigrants who have just lived their lives, but they don't realize how important it is. What they have to say is, one of whom, as I mentioned, the tortilla manufacturer, he said he was talking about the risk that he took to leave his homeland in Buena Vista, Mexico, to come to America.
Hmm.
And he said that here they give you everything, and there they give you nothing. And he said, what did I have to lose by giving up where I was and coming here? I already had nothing.
Wow.
And now he's won a very famous tortilla maker. It's really, the stories are just amazing. And I was as amazed as you when I heard the stories. I was as amazed as you when you read them.
It is incredible. Do you think the way our food culture is right now, with a lot of celebrity chefs and TV shows and everything, do we encourage or does it discourage young talent?
You know, I think people who go into the food business have to have four things. They have to have grit, and they have to have guts, and they have to have tenacity, and they have to have a passion for food. And if you have a passion for food, it really doesn't matter what you do. It's almost like the chemistry of falling in love. They've fallen in love with food, and they're going to do it even if they have to work and sweat for minimum wage for 12 years before they ever become a chef.
I know that feeling. Well, you consider yourself a world-class eater. Where did that all begin?
Oh, it's funny. My parents were not cooks. The opening line of my book goes something like, I grew up in Miami Beach, a child of parents who never cooked unless throwing a frozen TV dinner into the oven is your idea of cooking. My parents believed in food for nourishment and not food for the soul.
Oh.
And today, I mean, things are so different today, and I'm realizing as I go along that food now has really taken over as the entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in New York, it's the big entertainment. And people, you know, you've seen this. People will get a dish put in front of them, and the first thing they want to do is pull out their iPhone and photograph it and send it to all of their friends.
Well, yeah.
I mean, when I grew up, we were eating a hamburger, and it was a hamburger, and that was it. You know, you bought it, you ate it, you didn't think twice about it. But, man, when I came to New York City and I saw all these people, what was going on with them, it's just incredible.
It really is. And you say also in the book that you really learned to eat in New York. What sets New York apart from anywhere else in the U.S. when it comes to the culinary scene?
I think partially, you know, they call New York City the melting pot. And mm-hmm. when I say New York City, I'm talking about the five boroughs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that basically it's the fact that there's such ethnicity in the city. And when you think about it, all you need is a metro ticket and you can just eat about anywhere in the world in these five boroughs. So what sets it apart is the fact that there are so many immigrants here that have started food businesses and the opportunity that they've had to bring their restaurants along. I have my first chapter in the book is called Starting from Scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people who came obviously from nothing and what they've made of themselves. And one is an immigrant from Greece who opened up City Diner, which is very successful. Another is Mohammed Abilene, the Egyptian veterinarian who came here and started the Halal Guys. Uh-huh. Dominic Ansel from the Cronut.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard about Cronut?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, Dominic, his interview opens the book, and he came here from France, and he is as surprised as anybody on how well he's done and how the Cronut just took over the world. There are lines still. It's now 3 years since the Cronut started.
Mm-hmm.
There are lines around the block at 5 in the morning to get a Cronut.
You know, I actually looked up the recipe for a Cronut, and I just about cried. I said, forget it. I'm buying them from now on.
If you can get them.
Yeah.
You know, when I interviewed him, I said, my interview was at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and I said, Dominic, could I possibly try a Cronut? I've never had one before. And he said, no. He said, when we sell out, we sell out. It doesn't matter if you're a movie star or if you're a street vendor. If they're gone, they're gone.
Wow.
And he said, Inet, that goes for you too.
Oh, that's painful. Well, you talked to a lot of people, but was there anybody that didn't want to talk to you that you wish you could have gotten into the book?
Not one person turned me down. It was really surprising because this is an oral history. And what that means is I come in with a tape recorder and I come in, of course, well prepared with questions to ask about. So when I ask the questions, I let them answer into a tape recorder. I then edit it down and it runs in the book. They never see it from the time I walk out until the book comes out. And yet everybody that I asked said yes. And, I mean, just finding these people, too, was really part of the chore and part of the fun of writing Food in the City because it gave me an opportunity to go around and talk to people who own restaurants, people. I have a chapter on Front of the House, which talks about, which gives an opportunity to speak to people who are waiters, people like Alexander Smalls, who's an African-American who's restaurant, the Cecil, is the menu is all about the African diaspora, to Seta Mezzo's owner. So they, and of course it's great press for them, but it's also they're getting an opportunity to tell their stories. And I guess people really want that chance.
And everybody does. We only have a few minutes left, so I wanted to make sure that we touched on how social media has really impacted what we eat. And, you know, we talked about everybody whipping out the camera and the phone to take pictures of whatever they're having for lunch. And you consider someone out there a force that doesn't even have a show anymore, but she's still an incredibly powerful woman. You were talking about Oprah.
Okay, yes. I was thinking Oprah the Force, and I said with the capital F.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Oprah had a Levain cookie, and Oprah said, these are one of my favorite cookies. I mean, that's, what, 8 words?
Yeah.
And the lines are continuing to be around the block for Levain cookies, and as a matter of fact, TripAdvisor has them as the number one restaurant in New York. They are a 6-by-6-foot bakery.
Oh.
They are subterranean, and people call to make reservations all the time, and they said, we have a zinc counter with two stools, and all we do is sell baked goods.
That's wonderful.
And when that story is in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why would you not correct TripAdvisor? She said, are you kidding me? Why would I correct them? She said, I love that. So that's the Oprah effect.
And
I don't take anything away from their cookies either, but
I wouldn't either. And food bloggers are also very powerful people, too, in the industry now, aren't they?
They are. As a matter of fact, the story that Dominic Ansel tells is about a guy coming in from Grub Street, which is the blog for New York Magazine, the food blog. And he said to Dominic, what do you have that's new? And Dominic said, oh, well, we've just started this new little pastry. We call it the Cronut. And the guy came back and he blogged it on New York Magazine's food blog, Grub Street. And the rest, as they say, is history.
It really is. That's where I discovered the Cronut, was that blog. It's fantastic. The book
is
wonderful. Yeah. And if you love a good story, you are going to love Ina's book. It's Food in the City. And yes, we're going to give my listeners a chance to get their own copy. Thank you so much for this brief time we've had together. I know we could probably talk for hours, but it's best they buy the book, I think.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you.